A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Michael Litchens is the editor of the Catholic Exchange. He holds an MA in Religion and Literature from the University of Chicago. And when he isn't busy revising and editing, he spends much of his time studying overlooked spiritual experiences. He resides in Colorado, where you can often find him discussing preachers, ghosts, and churches of the Old West. Here he is, Michael Litchens on Coast to Coast. Michael, how have you been?
I've been very well, George. Thank you so much for having me again.
And how is the Sophia Institute doing? Pumping out great works.
Always, yeah. We're very busy, as always.
We're going to talk tonight about the Pope's exorcist, Father Gabriel Amorth. I'm going to tell you an interesting story. We know Russell Crowe, and I sent him a text today at 6 o'clock Pacific time and said, Russell, I've got a special guest on. We're talking about Father Gabriel Amorth, and you played that role in the movie, The Pope's Exorcist. Would you like to come on for a few minutes? He said, George, it's 1 a.m. Now, this is 6 p.m. Pacific time. Said, it's 1 a.m. I'm in Budapest doing a film. I'm going to bed. Have a great show. I love it. But tell That's me about great. Gabriel. He did over 60,000 exorcists, something like that?
Yes, he performed tens of thousands of exorcisms. The number went up well over 70,000 towards the end of his death. And that could be done on the same person and over very different sessions. Sometimes that could be just as little as 5 minutes with one person. So it varied from person to person. But yeah, he saw people every day, even up until his death in 2016. He was still seeing people daily who might need spiritual counseling or exorcism.
The Catholic Church takes exorcisms very seriously, doesn't it?
It very much does. It's Father Amorth would say that they weren't taking it seriously enough for a good portion of his lifetime, but he helped to bring it back and to put more emphasis on it.
Now, there are some non-Catholic exorcists as well. Yeah. I guess that's presentable. That's doable, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of non-Catholic exorcists. In the Catholic Church, you have to be a priest to be an exorcist, whereas in a lot of Protestant denominations or non-Christian groups, you don't necessarily have to be. But even Father Amorth pointed out that even us laity have the power to chase the devil away if need be.
And he was darn serious about what he did. He and 5 other priests founded the International Association of Exorcists. He got involved in this in a big way, didn't he?
He did. During his own lifetime, he felt that the vocation of exorcist wasn't being emphasized enough in the Catholic Church. In fact, I think when he started working, he worked with a priest, Candido Amantini, who had been the sole exorcist in the whole Diocese of Rome for 30 years. By the time Father Amorth was done, there were over 30 exorcists in the diocese.
What made him one of the most famous?
It was his openness to the media. He had previously worked in politics and media before becoming a priest. He had worked with the Christian Democrat Party in Italy. He was very involved with it, with a future prime minister even. And so he was used to writing and speaking. He had done courses in journalism. So when he became an exorcist and saw how little emphasis there was, he wanted to talk about it. And therefore the media was very taken with him. And he gave numerous interviews as well as writing about a dozen books.
He was one of a kind. He had at one point said that some of the cases he handled, he was convinced that the individual might have been possessed by 1,000 demons. 1,000 demons. One person.
One person and 1,000 demons. And that's why it would take sometimes when he would be seeing what he called patients, it wouldn't be just one and done session. He would have to see the person for sometimes years. In one case I know of, he saw the person for almost a decade.
Yeah, he talked about repeat times. It's not just like the movie. You don't pop in and pop out.
Exactly.
What causes demonic attacks, Michael?
There are, Father Amorth thought there were three major causes. The most dramatic one, of course, is making a pact with the devil. But the one he saw probably the most often was that people would go and procure curses or spells, things like that. This was especially common in Italy, where people would see, you know, this isn't just your tarot card reader or whatever. This would be an actual working magician that would be trying to secure curses. And that caused, in his experience, the majority of demonic attacks. And then there are the demonic attacks that, kind of like the Book of Job, where God permits the demonic attacks in order to help bring about holiness.
He was asked if the devil ever struck inside the Vatican, and he said yes, 1981, the attack on John Paul II when he was almost assassinated. And he believed that was the work of the devil.
He absolutely did. He also believed that the missing Vatican girl, I'm spacing on her name, was also the work of satanic cult within the Vatican. And he said on numerous occasions that he believed Satanism and Satan himself were operating within the Vatican's political council.
Would you have liked to have met him?
Oh, I wish I had. Like, our lifetimes overlap just a little bit, but I would have liked to have met him. If nothing else, not only to ask him more deeper questions about some of his theories, like the devil being in the Vatican, but also he had just a killer sense of humor. At times when he would be doing exorcisms, if the devil like started yelling or interrupting him, he would say, "Shut up, you're not worth a cigarette butt." And that was a common phrase he had for demons.
What got him involved in exorcisms?
Pure and simple. He was asked to do it by the former exorcist of Rome, Candido Amantini. Initially, when he was asked, Father Amorth was very reluctant. He kept saying, "Oh, you know, I'm not an exorcist. I'm a jokester. I play pranks. I'm not really someone who should be involved in this." But he felt called to it. And after Amantini kept insisting, "No, we really need someone like you to be an exorcist," he said, "Okay, I'll do it." He went through about 6 years of training to learn how to be an exorcist, and then he finally got his solo exorcism in the 1980s.
What possesses an individual? How do you diagnose that?
You have to diagnose it by figuring out if the person is sick from anything else. So Father Amorth would work with doctors, scientists, psychiatrists to see if there was any natural explanation for what a person might be going through. Other ways to diagnose it, of course, would be exposing them to holy objects or holy water. Thing Father Amorth would do is that he would introduce the person to holy water but not tell them it was holy water to see if they would have a reaction.
Uh-huh.
If they're especially disgusted by it or don't want to go into a church, that was usually a sign.
I would guess that, Michael, most doctors would diagnose someone as being mentally ill or schizophrenic, mm-hmm. or something like that, where Father Amorth would say, "This is a demonic possession. We need to do some work." They would be at wit's end, wouldn't they?
You'd think so, but they often work together. In fact, most exorcists often have a doctor or two that they work with. And the reason why is they want to look for a natural explanation before they go to the supernatural. And in a lot of cases, both in Father Morth's experience, but also with other exorcists, the doctors will absolutely certify that they cannot find a natural explanation for the weirdness that is going on in this person's life.
He would consult with scientists as well. What did he try to get from them?
He wanted scientists, he asked it, particularly a professional group of psychiatrists within Italy, to see if they could look more into demonic cases and cases of possession. Particularly what he found fascinating is while psychologists would tell him, yes, these things could be explained by psychology, it would usually be symptoms of multiple illnesses that could not be explained all at once. And so that's what he wanted them to do, is to study and find out if there were any other causes.
What causes a possession? What does the demon want?
The demon, ultimately a demon, whether it's doing the simple temptations, you know, the good angel, bad angel on your shoulder type of thing, or full-on possession or even haunting your house, they want to encourage rebellion of all of creation against its creator. So they want to sow chaos, they want to sow fear, and they want to put into people doubts that there is any good God that is ruling the universe.
And what generally gets rid of them? Why does it, in some cases, take so long?
A couple of reasons. One, the demons themselves may actually try to hide from the exorcist. Father Morth had numerous times when he would try to talk to the demon or something like that, it would just freeze up and refuse to talk to him, and he would have to force it to talk.
Through the individual that possessed, right?
Yes, the individual that possessed would either clam up, not even come into the church, or just freeze entirely. So he would have to, while performing an exorcism, basically command the demon to come and talk to him. In a lot of cases, people are possessed of, are going through a lot of personal struggles as well. So there might be something they're holding on to, something they're fearing, and it could be up to the individual patient to really help get rid of the demon. So in some cases, it can take, like Father Amorth said, multiple dozens of cases. And in particular, his last case, it actually went until his very death.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I had heard that the church had about 120 active exorcists at any given time. Is that a pretty accurate number?
It is a pretty accurate number. There was a while there when it was probably under 30.
Wow.
Thankfully,
that's low.
Through the work, it's really low. Through the work of Father Morth, it's probably actually over 200 now.
And how does he know somebody is possessed?
He knows someone is possessed through spiritual discernment. This was something he himself claimed he didn't think he had a lot of, and he preferred his instructor, Candido Amantini, and said that he had better spiritual discernment. But we know from all these writings, Father Morth clearly had discernment of spirits and was able to figure them out almost intuitively. But there was also the signs, like someone who was afraid of holy objects, water, the cross, relics. And there's also the signs if anybody is aggressive or just will not go into a holy place, such as a church or a chapel.
He once said that of the 30,000 exorcisms he did during a particular period, that's still a lot, Only 94 of them were actual full-blown possessions. That seems low.
A lot of cases he saw, it was less than 1% of all the people that he would see in day in and day out that needed a full major exorcism. So it was pretty low. A lot of cases could be explained. Either they were medical issues that were manifesting in a spiritual sign, or they weren't a full-on possession. They were what's called an infestation, which is your classic haunted house. And he said he got that call probably more than anything. People reported hearing strange phenomena or seeing strange phenomena in their home.
Well, he was based at the Vatican, right?
He was based in the Vatican. He often worked at the Chapel of the Holy Stairs, which is in Rome, right next to St. John Lateran, the chief cathedral in Rome.
Was he ever scared?
He was not. He claimed that he never felt fear in all of these cases, even at the beginning when he was under instruction from Amantini. He had full confidence in his guardian angel in the sacraments. He also personally felt Padre Pio, who was a spiritual director to him, was often interfering and helping in these exorcisms.
Did he have any particular prayer to rid the demon?
He had a couple. He shares a couple in his books, oddly. But he would pray in particular, and this is one we all can pray. You don't have to be a priest, but the Litany of Saints. That is, you call upon each of these saints, including your guardian angel and the St. Michael the Archangel, to protect you. And he also turned to Mary, the Mother of God, which we Catholics love. And he would turn to her very quickly. He had a deep, profound love of Mary. In fact, was involved with Marian devotion before he was involved in exorcism.
What do you think of these statues of the Blessed Virgin that are going around the country where people will go to parlors or homes for miracles, expecting to see the statue tear up?
It's interesting. I have not seen one of these statues in person yet. It's something my grandmother, on the other hand, who I adored, she saw one of these weeping statues and believed it was very miraculous.
I saw one as a kid, but it never weeped. But
interesting.
But it was one of them. They brought to an event in my grandmother's house in Michigan.
Wow.
They had a whole bunch of people in there praying away, and this statue was about 2 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And they had it up on a table with flowers around it and candles and everything, and people were just praying, hoping for it to start crying.
That is so interesting. It shows, like, even in our technological age, we still look for the mysterious and the miraculous.
It was kind of spooky to a kid, by the way.
Oh, I can imagine. That's all spooky to a kid, of the invisible forces of the world.
We're here to watch a statue cry? Why?
They're not meant to cry.
Now, Father Amorth died at 91 years old, something like that.
Yeah.
In 2016, not that far away.
Mm-hmm. And he led a very long and productive life, like encouraging many of the exorcists who work now in the Catholic Church owe their vocation to Father Amorth and his work.
Do you think he's in heaven now, or did the demons try to get him before he got away?
I'm sure that he is in heaven and that the demons let out a cry of annoyance that he got into heaven. I personally believe he prays for all of us who work in trying to preserve his memory and his mission. I sometimes feel him myself, and I'm thankful for him.
How many supernatural disturbances did he encounter, Michael?
He encountered quite a few. He mentioned, oddly enough, levitation was an occurrence he only experienced twice as an exorcist. But that one was his very first exorcism, where he encountered...
Once is too much.
I mean, once is too much, I agree. And this being also encountered itself as Lucifer. And he experienced in that exorcism the cold room. There was ice forming on the windows. He frequently had people who would spit at him, but the spit would turn to nails. So they were effectively spitting straight nails at his face.
Wow.
He kept several of those nails, actually, in his office.
Did he ever get hurt?
He would get minor injuries, such as being punched or one of those nails would make contact. He usually had a couple of assistants helping him out in the exorcism, so he was generally safe, but there was definitely some concern there for physical safety.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
A new season of Bridgerton is here, and with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix, then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.